Any questions or the next speaker?
Thank you, Ms. Noguski. I do have a question. When the state wind energy generation goals are listed, you probably know where that is, page 4 in the bill. There are provisions for 3,000 megawatts of wind energy in 2020 and 8,000 megawatts of installed capacity by 2030, with a certain designation for generation facilities located in coastal waters as defined in Title 12, Section 6001. I neglected to look at that title in that section. What's the definition of those coastal waters?
Well, the state waters are within 3 miles of the mainland or an island, and the goal includes both state waters or in federal waters that are close to those states.
The coastal waters referred to here are meet the statutory definition of the state water.
I'm turning to Todd, but I think
I believe so. Dan, you definitely double check that, but yeah. As you can see, it lists talking about both, making it clear it refers to both state and federal waters. We could definitely double check that.
But the intent is that it's the Gulf of Maine. It's not Massachusetts waters or New Hampshire's waters.
And not just Maine waters.
Yeah. Gulf of Maine.
Representative Fletcher.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the work session. We don't need to go into it today.
Yeah.
But if you could draw me the timeline connection, or really the status of the three test sites that have already been designated, what work is going on, when that work will be at a pilot project stage, so that we can get a sense. Because, of course, you know, we all realize this is developmental. This isn't proven technology yet. And I think that will be very important for me to understand as to what that critical path timeline is.
Yes.
For those three sites which have been determined to be, this is where we're going to prove it, at least get to that next level of work. So I think that will be critical to me. I'd also like to see the calculation on the assumptions behind the 5,000 megawatts replacing transportation and heating.
Okay.
And, you know, I could do it, but I'd make a mistake in the calculations.
Yeah.
So somebody could bring that. And I'd also like to understand what the deep water capital and operating cost assumptions would be and how that impacts the cost of electricity. I kind of read ahead in one of the testimonies. And I just want to get more than one estimate as to what that is.
What the costs are.
And what the specific assumptions are in that calculation. And I'd also, and I'd forewarned you with this, what's the critical factors of action this legislature needs to take in the next 30 days that to allow this to move forward, yet also not be so far ahead of ourselves we are doing work we absolutely can't do. Because I'm sure that you realize, in theory, this was the last day of this committee's meeting. Now, I know we got a lot of work to do, so we'll be here.
Right.
But as you know, we're kind of exhausted in our analysis sometimes.
Right.
And hopefully that's because the product we put out has a higher probability of success. And so, you know, I just need to understand what is absolutely critical that this legislature needs to decide on.
Right.
And why that's critical so that we are not impeding progress if progress is imminently available.
I will certainly do that for the work session. I just want to clarify one thing that may be a misunderstanding. This bill, the permitting process, the DEP, LURC, BPL permitting process in this bill would also apply to projects that are in shallow water, not the new technologies, but things that are commercially viable today, you know, over 1,000 megawatts of which has been located in Europe offshore. So it applies to that, and
yes,
primarily to okay. So and I just want to make sure that wasn't a misunderstanding.
No, I think I understood that. And
yeah.
You know, that goes back to my question. What's important now, Titan?
Yes.
What's really important that we make sure we concentrate on in the remaining days so that we get the critical few. And if there's other things that can be decided later,
yes,
then we need to understand that. Yeah. And I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Fletcher's last question is probably useful for other people in the room to contemplate. Given a bill of this size and its breadth at this stage in the session, all pieces may not be dealt with thoroughly by this committee before we adjourn. If there's folks in the room that have opinions about things that are pressing and should be dealt with as a priority, that would be good to share that opinion, and Ms. Noguski is going to address that before our work session.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Representative Fletcher, I mean, Flaherty.
Oh. I'd say there's a compliment, Chairman Hayden.
More hair.
Thank you very much. This is Justin. Thank you very much for all the work you and this task force did. I'm going to be kind of straight to the point, and I think a potential issue that is causing a lot of heartburn and the reason so many folks have showed up today, and that is Section A4, the transition to more efficient energy sources for home heating and transportation.
Right.
I am curious as to your opinion on the necessity of this language in this legislation. And if it is absolutely fundamental to the development of offshore wind and other renewable types of resources, that we include this. And just kind of like a little more information of where this came from. Is it even something that we need to state in this legislation? And can we live without it?
Yeah. Well, it was a surprise to me, as well as you, but I would say that the task force really had two primary goals. One is to develop Maine's offshore energy, renewable offshore energy resources in an environmentally responsible manner and use those to reduce our oil dependence. But the other was that the task force also recognized that our onshore resources, our onshore renewable resources, could also be used as a base for harnessing new efficient technologies to heat homes and for transportation. So it was very, very important to the task force to pursue in some form this idea of electric conversion because of the efficiencies and the meeting the goals that you have, and, you know, that the state has enunciated before in terms of energy independence, reduced carbon, and environmentally preferable sources. So I understand that there's a lot of angst standing behind me from oil dealers who see this as a threat to their business. And I understand where they're coming from. I know there are also oil dealers, at least one here, who doesn't just sell oil, but sells efficient heat sources. It may be propane. It may be a heat pump. It will depend on the customer and the customer circumstances. So there are oil dealers getting into other lines of business that are diversifying away from oil to heat pumps that are, I don't know, 300 times more efficient than an oil furnace. So, that have a coefficient of performance of 7, from 2 to 7, okay? And I'm sorry for that, and please bear with me and take my correction. But the task force believes that we need to look, as Representative Fitz said, we need to look to the future. And this is our language to get us to the future.
Perhaps for the work session, if you could kind of give us an impression of the difference of why this wouldn't happen naturally when we encourage offshore wind and why we then have to put it in statute. Again, the work session.
Okay.
One small piece of a very big and important and I think good bill, but I think it's one part that might have us hung up for too long and prevent us from moving forward on the other good parts of the bill.
I hear you.
Senator Bowman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it was Yogi Berra. He was, many things are attributed to him, but one of the things he said, I think, was that the future ain't what it used to be. And if you look ahead at the future, it sure doesn't look like it's going to be what it used to be. And then if you remember from, some of you are old enough to remember the Graduate, the film The Graduate. I think it was a line in there that said, the future is plastics. Well, back then it was. And we are surrounded by plastics. Right now it looks like, at least in large part, the future is in electricity. So deny that if you will. Deny that at your risk. It sure looks like the future is there for a host of reasons. So that's kind of just that's advice. But secondly, I thank you, Mr. Nagurski, for simplifying. 36 pages or whatever. I didn't count them all, but I'll check it out.
That's close.
Needs, it cries for simplification. And so thank you for what you did. Be prepared at the work session to do some more simplifying, because I think simplifying is the key to understanding what the intent and purpose of this bill is. Secondly, I want to compliment you. I went to several of your test site hearings, and you are to be highly commended for those of you in the audience and maybe on the committee that went. It was the picture of the way it was supposed to be. You listened to everybody respectfully. Everybody had a chance to get their oar in the water, and it was done very professionally. I really appreciate that. And finally, for the work session, several of the committee members have started you down that road, but you need to listen to those that have already, via emails and other things, other means of communications, spoke in opposition to the bill, and that will, I hope, briefly and not repetitively. I always have to get that word, those words into my testimony. When you testify here, you will be brief, you will be succinct, and you will just say, I agree with whoever came before me. But you and those speaking, those proponents of the bill need to address those issues for the future, and how we implement the good aspects of this bill. Critically depend on that understanding and proceeding at a pace and not running, and some people view it as running to a conclusion. So anyway, that's what I'd like to add, and I appreciate your listening. Thank you.
Thank you.
I need to offer a potential friendly amendment to the Senator's vision.
Always welcome.
It would be that the future would be in hyper-efficient use, generation and use of electricity and other resources. The original Representative Fletcher had another question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We were commenting on that. I think we spent so much time together that we've all blended together because we call each other the same name and we're actually starting to think alike, which is really scary.
Even more scary.
For the work session.
Hairstyles.
And, here is something I think would help me. Right now we've got 300 to 400 megawatts of land-based wind either running and spinning or going to be running and spinning. We are going to get to 2,000 megawatts by 2015. That's the goal. That's more than we need in the state of Maine because we've already got 1,000 more megawatts of installed capacity than what we already use. Okay? That wind is 8 cents a kilowatt. Here will be the straight-faced question. What is the interim strategy in the next 5 years to test the hypothesis that we can increase electricity usage for transportation and home heating? That will be the basis and verification for the longer-term hypotheses that we can do the same thing with 22 cents a kilowatt electricity. So it's kind of like if you can't get past that one, what's going to change to make the 22 cent for more transportation and more home heating? Okay?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Mr. Nagurski, I was prepared to let you go if I didn't see more questions. Now I do see one. I was going to ask in follow-up to my question about what was the breakdown between nearshore and deep water ocean energy, for you to tell us at the work session, how you came to the recommendations on the two areas that are part of the bill, or how the task force came to that, because some of the issues that have been raised have to do with perceptions or concerns about conflicts. And as I see, Speaker Pingree has sent us a letter that has arisen from things that she's heard from constituents, and her feeling is that greater concerns have been raised about the nearshore than the deep water. Mm-hmm. And you have a recommendation on the allocation between those two. I'd like to, hopefully you can flesh out for us how you came to, or how the task force came to those, that breakdown, and what this committee should consider in looking at that, if you could. Okay. Representative Blanchard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't want to hold you up much longer, but first of all, I want to thank you for bringing this into a concise four-page diagram of what this 36 pages turned out to be. But I'm also going to ask you, you were sitting here, and you probably heard the words of Representative Percy. She made a statement about turning this bill into a resolve. Maybe it doesn't have to be a resolve, but I think it's got to have a lot of work done. And I think probably a resolve may answer some of a lot of the questions and would give us a little bit more time to, I guess you might say, intake the bill, either tear it apart or put it back together or add some or delete some. What do you feel about her suggestion about a resolve?
I'd rather wait till the hearing is concluded to see what people, I know what some of the concerns here today are, and to see, I'm prepared to spend the next whenever, as long as it takes, to get as much consensus as possible and narrow the issues to have a bill come out. This is a high priority, not only of the task force, but the governor. I think not having a bill would send a very bad signal, and so there's a lot of momentum and for this bill, and I think there probably are some sections that that we need, you know, certainly we will work on to narrow differences, but I do think that I'm optimistic we can have a bill.
Thank you.
Ask me in a week.
We will. Seeing no more questions, I'm going to quickly thank you very much.
Thank you.
And